It was a showdown between authoritarians and democrats, and the democrats won. This is the story of Poland's historic election.
In Poland, a former PM may be stepping back to power. Initial results put Donald Tusk and his opposition allies ahead in the election.
An historic moment to remember, to capture for 21st century Poland.
International support for Ukraine likely got an indirect boost yesterday, with Poland's centrist and progressive parties appearing to have won enough votes in the weekend elections to form a coalition government and oust the country's current nationalist ruling party.
Welcome to the Another Europe podcast with me, Zoe Williams, and my co-host Luke Cooper. Our guest on today's podcast is Anna Oppenheim. A member of the Another Europe National Committee, Anna has been active in the left-wing Polish party Razem and a co-host of the English language podcast on all things Poland, the Polcast. In the run-up to these historic elections, she was promoting the progressive vote among the diaspora. In today's podcast, we get her thoughts on the election and what happens next.
This podcast is part of the Ukraine and the World project, which is organised in collaboration with Foreign Policy in Focus, a platform based at the Institute for Policy Studies, a progressive think tank in the United States, and our long-standing partner, European Alternatives, who are rethinking the nation-state in Europe and beyond. We'll be publishing a series of articles, blogs, and podcasts across our platforms, exploring the war against Ukraine as a major inflection point in global history, requiring new thinking and analyses from progressives on how to address the problems of our crisis-ridden world. Members of Another Europe is possible get access to additional podcast material as a benefit of joining our campaign. To join and support our work, go to anothereurope.org/join.
Welcome to the show, Anna. I haven't seen you for ages. How are things? You must be really happy.
I'm immensely relieved. I mean, seeing that exit poll, I could, finally relax, because I was really stressed in the lead up to the election. It was very unclear until the very last minute which way it would go. I am hugely proud of everyone in Poland and abroad who will help me mobilize, get people to vote, because one of the big stories of this election really is the incredible turnout. I mean, 74% in an Eastern European country that's used to turnouts closer to 40-50%. Turnout among young people went up by 25 percentage points, among women as well. It was impressive. And yeah, now that we're recovering from the campaign, I think we can start thinking about some of the challenges ahead, because it won't be easy. Firstly, forming a government with most likely three parties or three big groupings, significant differences between them. Also, the new government is likely to be in conflict with the president, Andrzej Duda, who is from PiS. But I have to say, I am looking forward to these challenges. They're better ones to have, and I can't wait to be frustrated at a centrist government rather than terrified of a far-right one.
You say that turnout among women and young people went up. Do you think, did we see something similar to what happened in the midterms in America, where the kind of women, feminist, reproductive rights argument suddenly roared back into force? Or is that wrong?
Oh, absolutely. Abortion rights was at the forefront. And it's interesting how, by enabling the further restricting of abortion rights, law and justice has accidentally created a whole generation of politically aware and active young women who overwhelmingly vote for progressive parties.
I think your point about turnout as well is so important, isn't it? Because this does feel like a moment not just for Poland, but also for Eastern Europe as a whole, you know, that the kind of recovering that spirit of the protest movements of the 1980s in a way. So if you see the 1980s and Solidarnosc and that amazing progressive moment as one phase in the political history of Eastern Europe, we then get this sort of transition into these 20 or 30 years of atomization and hangover and depression with the kind of failures of the liberal sort of moment. Whereas in the last few years in Poland, you've had all these incredible mass movements again, and now it feels like they've got that what they've deserved. They've delivered a real political change in Poland.
100%. I've been seeing this. Like, growing up in the 2000s in Poland, there was a general sense of apathy and cynicism towards politics, which was reflected in low voter turnout, but also in the absence of mass social movements, which has really changed over the past few years. We've seen hundreds of thousands of people taking the streets, protesting against the government, protesting for reproductive rights, protesting for LGBT rights, for rule of law, and that was also reflected in the election. So there is a real repoliticization of Polish society.
Let's talk about Law and Justice, the party that has been in power in Poland since 2015. What did they do in office and how bad were they?
So Law and Justice, or Peace, is a party that's ultra-conservative, that's often listed in one sentence with the likes of Viktor Orban in Hungary or Donald Trump in the US. It's a religious party that's very close to the Polish Catholic Church. It's also very nationalist. Economically, it has some redistributive policies, and in generally, it favors giving people cash transfers directly rather than making big structural changes to the economy. But at the same time, it is incredibly racist, homophobic, misogynistic. It got into power in 2015 on the back of an anti-refugee, quite openly racist campaign. And since then, it's been undermining the rule of law in Poland, getting into conflict with the EU over the independence of the courts. It packed the highest court with its own people, which allowed it to outlaw abortion nearly completely, a bit like it happened in the US. It has run huge anti-LGBT campaigns. It made changes to the school curriculum to teach children conservative values. It also oversaw the humanitarian crisis on the Belarusian border, where we saw refugees being subject to pushbacks and journalists and NGOs banned from the area from reporting or offering their support. And the list goes on. So a very authoritarian government, a very conservative one, and as time went by, increasingly so.
And presumably in the election campaign, Law and Justice must have really fought ugly to stay in power. What was the election campaign like? I mean, especially when you consider one of the things that they did during their time in office was, of course, really take control of the media and especially the state media and turn it into a vehicle for their own reactionary agenda. So how did that play out in the election campaign itself?
Yeah, it was a very ugly campaign. The way Peace normally runs its campaigns is centering them around a single enemy. So in 2015, that was refugees, and everything always ended with the response, we need to ban refugees, ban migrants from coming to Poland. Then in 2019, 2020, it was LGBT plus people. It was a campaign based on homophobia and transphobia. In this election, it was a bit different because Peace ran quite a personalized campaign against Donald Tusk, so the leader of the platform, who is the most likely next prime minister. And he was accused of being a German agent, a careerist working for EU interests, a traitor. Even there is serious allegations of him being a Putin supporter. And I'm saying this as someone who's not a fan of Tusk, but the campaign that's run against him was really outrageous. And the tools that the government had to its disposal is, as you mentioned, not just its own campaign, but also public media. Because one of the first things that Law and Justice did coming into power was taking over the public broadcaster, replacing all its key journalists with its own people, and turning it into a kind of 24/7 propaganda machine that makes something like GB News look like the gold standard of journalistic integrity and balance. It's something more akin to Fox News, just kind of spreading hate constantly, repeating government lines, or outright sort of manipulating the information it presents. And that was very much its tone during the election campaign as well. So, for example, when I watched the key debate just a few days before the vote, it was quite funny seeing the two hosts running it ask questions that are not really questions. Basically make long statements that end with a question. Or do you agree that, you know, a 2-minute speech?
Obviously, the result of this election showed that people actually aren't that swung by a very partisan media if there's something that they want to do instead. Do you think that's a fair reading?
Yeah, I sort of feel like the state broadcaster has moved so far to the right that is beyond parody. That is so unsubtle that people kind of know what to expect from it by now. And there was also, it was a huge social media campaign. There were campaigns by, you know, private media as well, but primarily social media. You know, TikTok was a real terrain of struggle in this campaign because the opposition parties knew they would not get a hearing in the public media. So they did whatever else they could to reach people. It also meant bigger ground campaigns, for example, and a grassroots mobilization. I think the other thing the government did that is worth mentioning is was announcing a so-called referendum at the same time as the election. The referendum consisted of four questions, all of which were meant to kind of set the terms of debate. So there was a question, for example, about, do you agree with the sell-off of Polish wealth to foreign entities? Bizarrely phrased, but a clear kind of dog whistle meant to be attacking Tusk, because yeah, the lines were about him being a kind of foreign agent working for Germany, trying to sell Poland to Germany. There are two questions about whether Poland should be forced to accept refugees or demolish the Belarus border wall, once again trying to frame the campaign around the subject of migration and kind of making people think about that just before they cast a vote for their candidate. That was also kind of hoping to sway the election, but it didn't work. There was a successful boycott campaign. The turnout was around 40%, so short of 50, which would have made it binding. So it showed that, yeah, when people organize, they can really counter that official government narrative.
And how easy is it going to be to actually unwind Law and Justice's agenda in power? And what's the perspective of the opposition on that? I mean, you mentioned very briefly earlier their relatively pretty progressive economic policies that they introduced, the famous child benefit policy that was initially denounced by the Polish neoliberal party, but was pretty a normal child benefit policy that would be considered normal in a Western European country. They were very strongly denounced for that. Is it a fair reading to say that some of their authoritarian policies will be unwound, but some of their progressive economic policies will be kept by whatever new coalition government emerges?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's broadly correct. There will definitely be disagreements within the new coalition over economic policy, because as I said, it'll likely be a very broad one, including both neoliberals and the left and everything in between. But everyone has pledged not to get rid of the child benefit program, for example, to protect the things that people have already been given. So, you know, no one's really running a big kind of pro-austerity campaign. And I think that's probably accurate, probably where the parties are at in appreciating that, you know, these programs have helped lift people out of poverty while not causing the economic collapse that some people predicted. The challenge in terms of moralized socially liberal policies and undoing some of the authoritarianism would be, as I said, the president, who still has nearly 2 years of his term to go and who has the power to veto government legislation. So it'll be interesting to see what attitude Andrzej Duda takes, whether he'll be trying to veto absolutely everything the new government tries to do, or whether he'll try to meet them halfway, perhaps.
And there was a party running that was even to the right of Peace Confederation. What were they about and what were they kind of offering?
Confederacja or Confederation are really quite terrifying. So it's an alliance of different small groups, some of which are openly anti-democratic, for example, calling for the return to the monarchy. Some of them are very clear links to far-right street movements. And that was a party that at one point was polling extremely well, especially with young men. At its peak, it had 17% support overall across the country. While, you know, having views such as being openly anti-Semitic, extremely homophobic, advocating for prison sentences for women who have abortions, regardless of the circumstances. So really quite scary. But in this election, they attempted to moderate their image, to appear kind of sleek and polished, and to really focus on talking about the economy, for example, advocating for privatizing healthcare, for lowering taxes, supporting small businesses. But the left did quite a good campaign of exposing their more extreme views that they preferred not to talk about. For example, multiple of its candidates said openly that they don't believe women should have the right to vote. There are candidates spreading bizarre conspiracy theories about 5G and COVID, a candidate who openly described his views as fascist, a leading figure, Janusz Korwin-Mikke, denying the Bucha massacre, saying it was fabricated. So left politicians, in every debate they could, try to read out those statements to tell people what Konfederacja really stood for. And yeah, it is also the only really pro-Russian party in Polish politics. Even though during the campaign, they got a message not to talk about it, which led to some hilarious interviews of interviewings asking candidates, well, so who do you want to win, Russia or Ukraine? And a candidate being like, oh, well, I'm not really allowed to say right now. Okay, but who do you think should win? I would prefer not to talk about this. But obviously, everyone knew that the answer was Russia. And they have previously made very strong anti-Ukrainian statements, which is also not very popular within Polish society.
And that kind of brings us to part of the campaign, which was promoting anti-refugee sentiment against the Ukrainians. Do you think that's what did for them?
It was certainly part of their campaign. They especially attacked Ukrainian refugees' access to benefits, pledging not to give a penny more to Ukrainian refugees. And I think there is a minority of Polish society that is maybe skeptical of how many refugees Poland has accepted and how much support they got. But the overwhelming majority of Polish society is still very welcoming and very supportive. So there was probably a vote to be mobilized that way, but it didn't quite work out for them because even for the standards of Polish right, their views on a lot of issues were just far too extreme.
I think as well, one of the most encouraging things about this election is what you mentioned earlier, the youth quake-like phenomenon, because as you suggested just then, previously, Poland and the Polish far right was the country that political scientists pointed to in order to say, well, hang on a minute, it's not everywhere is like Britain and the United States. Not everywhere is the far right left split, if you like, a question of generational divides, because in Poland there was this very large youth movement and youth electorate behind the far right. And this election seems to be a real moment of change for that. I noticed that Law and Justice's youth vote between the ages of 18 to 24 went down to something like 15-16% or something. So really quite a crushing defeat for them and a real change.
Yeah, they absolutely collapsed among young generations, although there was also a big gender difference. So young women in Poland being overwhelmingly progressive and left-wing, and the left, Lewica, doing very well as well. Whereas for a while, it seemed like young men would overwhelmingly opt for Konfederacja. In the end, they also underperformed, and KLs and liberals came first. So yeah, the young generation, overwhelming anti-government, majority liberal, but also with this dangerous far-right element that shouldn't be ignored.
Fascinating. And that's a really important caveat on the gender divide. So what about the liberal opposition then, Donald Tusk? Like, you know, he's one of the few politicians in Poland with really quite a big profile outside of the country as president of the European Council. Did he have a good campaign? I mean, a couple of weeks before election day, He sort of led this big dramatic march for democracy, etc. Was the final result for his centre-right party a bit of a disappointment for him, although the government itself is going to be defeated and is defeated in terms of like a coalition of parties being able to stop them? The final result for his party doesn't look that electric. So where does Tusk sit? Has he had a good campaign or a bad one? And what can we expect from him as the new prime minister?
So Tusk ran what I would describe as a largely vibes-based campaign. So yeah, as you mentioned, there were these huge anti-government marches that didn't really organize around any demands. They talked in slogans about European values and rule of law and, you know, maybe respect for women and minorities, but without very clear policies. And that was largely his campaign. Towards the end of the campaign, KLs, the coalition he was leading, released 100 concrete policies, what they called. But you couldn't really pinpoint a kind of flagship policy, a clear alternative. I think most, I would risk saying that most of you who voted for them couldn't list you like three key policies. It was basically about getting rid of the government. It was basically about being pro-European, being modern, being progressive as kind of values. KO was dragged kicking and screaming towards supporting legalizing abortion in the first 12 weeks of the pregnancy, but that was also not a given. It was something they preferred not to talk about until the huge women's movement forced them to. So it was largely maybe not quite a negative vote in the sense of an unenthusiastic one, because there was a lot of enthusiasm for getting rid of the government. But it was, yeah, it kind of positioned itself as a reaction to law and justice, as opposed to a platform with a clear vision. In terms of what we can expect, Tusk is, he had previously already been a prime minister of Poland. He's quite a mainstream center-right politician, perhaps not as fanatical about austerity as David Cameron's Tories, not as ideological as Lies of Liz Truss, not a culture warrior. In the campaign, he talked left on the economy, trying to reassure law and justice voters that he will not be cutting welfare, but at the same time also using some racist dog whistles about migration, accusing the government of being soft on migration. So yeah, I wouldn't really expect, you know, a huge transformation economically, but probably a slow kind of liberalization of some social policy and moving closer towards Europe. But yeah, of course, there is going to be two other coalition groupings, most likely, pushing him in different directions.
So at the risk of sounding parochial, is it a little bit like if you're in the UK, Keir Starmer's Labour Party has won in coalition with the SNP and the Lib Dems? Is that how the left is feeling about it? Like, thank God that happened and not the other thing.
I'd say, yeah, I was definitely seeing a lot of similarities between the strategies of Keir Starmer and Donald Tusk. Having a minimal program, focusing on attacking the government, trying to look kind of competent and technocratic more than anything else. Obviously, Keir Starmer is meant to be representing the left. Donald Tusk never claimed to be left-wing, but they're playing a sort of similar balancing act.
And I've heard like gossipy stuff about Donald Tusk, that he's like an incredibly, incredibly Machiavellian dark force of nature. Is that your observation?
Well, I never really thought about him that way, to be honest. Like, to me, he doesn't strike me as someone with a huge political project. I think, yeah, he's definitely strongly pro-European, generally a moderate, you know, where he can be described as a careerist. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't dispute that. Certainly wouldn't trust him. Yeah, he's not someone who I personally would trust. And I don't always like 100% know what you can expect from him. But I don't think I'd see him as a massive manipulator.
I mean, you could see that description as being a kind of feature of his career. So, you know, he was the president of the European Council, and the European Council famously doesn't have its meetings in public. There's no transparency at all. It's all behind closed doors diplomacy, and there's no sort of videos of the council meeting in the way that you can watch a video of the US Senate or anything like that. It's really privatized politics. And so I think, you know, it's the nature of his job, where he was basically maneuvering constantly between 27 other states. And I think you'd probably have to be a bit of a Machiavellian-like figure to do the job, to be honest.
It takes a certain kind of person to be able to do that job, so I can understand that, but I don't necessarily see him as more Machiavellian than anyone else who'd be in that position.
So Anna, who were like this third way party? Are they the story of this election in some ways? What are they? Centrist insurgents? Conservative farmers? It looks like an odd mix of politics. So this is the party that came third in the election overall, right? And seemed to have done quite well from the outside.
Yeah, so Third Way is not really a party. It's a kind of electoral pact of two very distinct parties. One of them is PSL, one of Poland's oldest parties. That's agrarian, that's a bit like small C conservative, but not too extreme, economically centrist, but yeah, very much a base in villages. The other one was Poland 2050, which was a kind of personality-based party launched quite recently by a Polish journalist and TV presenter, Szymon Hołownia, and kind of centered around this popular personality who presented TV shows like the Polish equivalent of Britain's Got Talent. And what he tried to present is positioning himself in opposition to the kind of toxic debate going on between the two main parties, trying to position himself as a kind of adult who wants to be in charge, you know, let's stop the infighting and focus on business, that kind of thing. He's been described as extreme center, trying not to talk too far to the right or too far to the left, had a bit of a focus on environmental policy, had a bit of a focus on supporting disabled people. So we'll have some positive things to potentially bring to the new government. But the thing is, Poland has a long history of personality-based parties that do very well in one election and then kind of fizzle out or perhaps merge with something else. Because there is an appeal of the outsider, right? Someone who presents himself, it's always a man, as like not really a politician, more of a celebrity or more of a man of the people. But once those people become politicians, they kind of lose their appeal. And my prediction will be something similar will happen here.
What about the left? What are the left's priorities in government? What do the left really want to get out of this likely coalition? Would they join a coalition or would they support it from the outside? They didn't do quite as well as last time, lost a few percentage points. So what's the mood like in Razem and the wider parties that are in the left coalition?
I would say the mood is quite mixed. I think the left as a whole has some soul searching to do. There are definitely challenges. I think the left really struggled to distinguish itself from KO, from the liberals, because there was a strong message coming from Tusk that you have to vote for the biggest party. There's only one force that can defeat peace. And, you know, basically a campaign of tactical voting, even though it doesn't really work that way under PR. So that was one of the reasons why the left lost votes. The other one being kind of trying to play nice because already imagining themselves as geo-coalition partners, which also, you know, can have its benefits, but also doesn't really work if you're trying to reposition yourself as a separate political force. So there will certainly be conversations had within the left. I'm sort of hoping that a more centrist government can allow the left to not just be sort of attacking the next bad thing that's happening, but putting forward its own positive vision. At the same time, Razem, so my party within the kind of broader left coalition, did really well, outperform expectations. And there are candidates on Lewica's the left list representing Razem who got like really, really huge support, sometimes even unseating sort of more liberal left candidates and sitting left MPs. Because Poland has a party list system where as voting for the party, you vote for your candidate. And Razem candidates did very well. So we actually ended up with one more MP than before and two new members of the Senate. I think partly because of having this distinct identity, running clearly independent campaigns, but also having very enthusiastic local activists and absolutely enormous ground campaigns. So that's perhaps something to learn from. In terms of the left priorities, here we're entering kind of tough coalition negotiations. Definitely abortion rights will be a hot topic because parties like PSL, the Agrarian Party, is perhaps less enthusiastic about liberalizing abortion law than left parties will be. Apart from that, definitely defending welfare spending and going against the kind of rhetoric that some of the more centrist leaders try to present about how the government is paying too much money. I think another area that will be key for the left is education. There is already talk about there being potentially a left candidate for education secretary, campaigning for education funding, but also to make education more secular, further away from the church, to make it LGBT inclusive. also a big focus on mental health among young people. And finally, housing is an issue that the left really tried to focus on in this election, especially talking about renters' rights and building social housing, which really no other party talked about. So I imagine if a coalition government happens, which is looking very likely, social housing will be a big thing that we're pushing for.
And how did Ukraine feature in the election? Agricultural imports have been a big issue, but did that come up?
To an extent, I think overwhelmingly, I'd say support for Ukraine wasn't a huge dividing line. Most of Polish society and parties across the political spectrum, with the exception of Konfederacja, are very clearly on Ukraine's side in the war, supporting Ukrainian resistance, supporting arming Ukraine, and in favor of accepting and supporting Ukrainian refugees. Konfederacja tried to make it a campaign topic, especially the refugee question, but it didn't quite fly. But towards the end of the campaign, there was a bit of a souring of relationships between the Polish and the Ukrainian government. Some of that had to do with the conflict around grain imports, we'll talk about in a second. Some of it also had to do, I think, with the election campaign and with peace being scared of losing voters to Konfederacja, so trying to kind of ramp up the nationalist rhetoric. But in terms of grain imports, Poland has been in conflict with the EU over allowing grain imports from Ukraine and actually announced a kind of unilateral ban on grain imports because both Poland and Ukraine are economies with that rely in part on agriculture, that have farmers really defending their interests. And you can definitely understand why Ukraine, a kind of war-torn economy, would really count on its key allies like Poland to support it. At the same time, a core part of Law and Justice vote is farmers who are really opposed to this. The conflict really peaked after Zelensky made, I think, quite an unfortunate speech accusing Poland of helping Putin by not accepting Ukrainian grain. And that was received very badly across Poland, from the right to the left. A lot of people felt quite understandably hurt by it, given that Poland has been such a strong ally, given diplomatic, military, humanitarian support to Ukraine. It was kind of reported in the Western media that as a response to that, Poland stopped arming Ukraine, which a lot of people in Poland were sort of pushing back. And that was a bit of an overinterpretation. While there was definitely kind of tough rhetoric, Prime Minister made a statement that Poland is not currently arming Ukraine, but that was in Poland kind of interpreted as a more of a factual statement that the Polish army needs new weapons, it needs more funding, it has to focus on rebuilding itself, and then potentially continuing support to Ukraine, as opposed to a kind of sudden U-turn. But yeah, you could see the language changing, and Donald Tusk and, you know, Polish liberals and clearly the Polish left are very strongly pro-Ukrainian. So I'm kind of hoping that now with the new government, well, soon, within a matter of weeks or months in place, there will be some refreshed goodwill on both sides.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting, isn't it, the Poland-Ukraine relationship, because there's so much sort of history overhanging it as well. I mean, every year in July, like, Poland marks what it calls the Bloody Sunday atrocities, where in July 1943, Ukrainian nationalists and supporters of Hitler carried out very serious atrocities against ethnic Poles in the throes of the Second World War. And that remains a source of, you know, real historical memory that is very important, I think, to Poland.
Yeah, absolutely. It was actually quite an emotional moment. I think the only time I ever felt positive towards something that Duda was doing is when I saw him and Zelensky together commemorating the victims of the Volhynia massacre last summer, because my great-grandparents were actually Volhynia survivors. So seeing the two presidents together commemorating the victims felt quite meaningful. But yeah, it has been something that's been difficult in Poland-Ukraine relationships for decades, really.
Yeah, and especially because it was forbidden to talk about during the Soviet Union Warsaw Pact era in Eastern Europe, essentially. So you have this sort of repressed memory that communism, authoritarianism actively repressed. And then even decades after the fall of communism, it's still a subject of sort of great kind of political controversy in a way. And then, of course, you also have, you know, just the fact that Ukraine was part of, you know, the Polish-Lithuanian, or Western Ukraine was part of the Polish-Lithuanian Commonwealth. So, you know, I've often like heard it kind of described that, you know, Ukraine is this, has these kind of interesting colonial relationships in some ways with both Poland and Russia. And then at the same time, you know, Ukraine, there's all these entanglements of Ukrainian nationalism historically with the Nazi period as well. So, yeah, I think it's not surprising that I guess these things are still kind of easily instrumentalized by political nationalists on both sides. But it sounds really like, I guess, the new government will be able to chart a new course in its relationships with Ukraine.
Yeah. In the campaign, Tusk criticized the government for their more kind of anti-Ukrainian rhetoric, pledged to be a strong ally, and certainly the left really sees this not only as a kind of pragmatic issue in the interest of Poland, but as a fundamental moral issue. So I imagine the new government will be on the right side here.
That concludes this podcast for those listening on the podcast platforms. Members of Another Europe get access to extra material as a benefit of membership. To join and support our work, go to anothereurope.org/join. In this week's Extra Time, we talk about what the elections mean for the European Union.